Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to MBR, or as we like to call it around here, Nothing But Rants, the show where I find topics that I'm oddly passionate about, and I pontificate upon them. These are not hot takes, but rather takes that I'm hot about.
Let's shut up and grab some tape.
Still pretty funny though.
What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome in to the Film Guy Network on a fabulous Thursday evening. Last show, best show, as we say around here, hours 7 and 8 of the week here in the offseason, hours 9 and 10 of our live streaming content during the regular season. It's going to be our best show of the week. I can guarantee it right here. We got a loaded one for you as always. We got a quarterback poaching story, or at least allegations. Maybe false allegations of a quarterback poaching attempt that went on this offseason. I agree with Brian Kelly, question mark? We're going to talk about that tonight. We got some spinoff topics on the House vs. NCAA news that happened this week. We also have a timeline for the potential punishment of the Michigan investigation from the sign-stealing scandal. And we are going to play a game with the SEC win totals. It's a great show for you guys tonight. Make sure you're hitting that thumbs up button, like, subscribing, rate, and review, and all that good stuff. But I want to start tonight's show with a little game I like to call The Next Step. Okay?
All right.
I have a group of both players, teams, coaches, programs, you name it, in the world of college football that have to, quote unquote, take the next step in 2025. In other words, if you don't elevate your game or your program, you or your stock is going to be diminished drastically. Do you want to hear my first example of this?
Let's hear it.
DJ Lagway. DJ Lagway is a next step category football player for me this year. I'm a ceiling evaluator, guys. I think you know this by now. I didn't start being a ceiling evaluator. I was more of a, are you a good football player? Do you play the game the right way? I was one of those evaluators when I first started this business. And now I realize, okay, that's a ceiling sport. All right, I am a ceiling evaluator. I am one that's going to fall in love with the flashy and the fancy. But I don't marry flashy and fancy, especially not at the quarterback position. I need consistency, right? I need you to show up every single down and play the position with a level of discipline and a level of proper decision-making that makes me want to invest in you at an extremely high rate. And though I am fascinated by the highs of DJ Lagway, there are some concerns for me, right? This is not a college football player, or excuse me, there is not a college football player on the planet that can make the types of throws and the wow types of plays that DJ Lagway makes. However, through nearly 200 attempts so far through his college career, I think it's 197, through 197 attempts in college, we are completing less than 60% of our passes. Now, we're right there on the fringe. I think we're 59.9, but it ain't ideal. Even at 60%, it's not great. I want to be a much more high or a much higher completion percentage, and that's just the box score. But when you turn the film on of this guy as well, guys, you see sporadic decisions. You see, okay, you might be trusting your abilities a little bit too much. Hey, we didn't see that guy. Hey, the game might be a little too quick for us right now. Some of that stuff I expect to see from a freshman. However, we got to take that next step and avoid some of that stuff we saw in year one as a player slash starter. In year one as the full-time starter, we got to take a next step.
Yeah, I feel like DJ Lagway is almost the poster child for this type of segment of got to take the next step for that program. You got to help make that entire program take the next step. Billy Napier take the next step. And it all kind of hinges around DJ Lagway.
Also, I've got to see you remain healthy. Like, we had a hamstring thing that knocked us out last year. We got a shoulder thing that knocked us out most or, like, bothered us last year and knocked us out this spring. Buddy, you're 6'2 and a half, 6'3, 240 pounds. I need you to play durable. That's what I need you to do as well.
Facts. I have Nick Harbor as one of these.
Yes.
Because
that's a great
big
answer.
One.
The discussion around South Carolina is obviously Lenore Sellers and what he provides and the type of ceiling he has because, again, like Lagway, their success kind of hinges on him. But I would say that Nick Harbor is almost a bigger factor in this offense because even if you just get a replication of what Lenore Sellers did last year, South Carolina is going to be just fine. But where are the wide receivers at? Where are you going to find these playmakers? And Nick Harbor is really one that's been highlighted. They got Jared Brown from Coastal Carolina, and Mazio Bennett was good for them. But, like, if Nick Harbor doesn't show up this year, if Nick Harbor does not ball out for this football team this year, you're going to be relying on, like, a group of freshmen to kind of step up and take over this wide receiver
role. And from a South Carolina team's perspective, they need him to pop for sure. But even from his individual draft and like prospect eval and trajectory as a whole, if he don't make a massive leap this year, I don't know when he will. This is his first, I think you might have mentioned it, this is his first offseason really dedicating solely to football. This is a track athlete that ran track in college, not just a high school track star. This kid ran SEC, like, championship caliber times in the 200 and qualified nationally, I believe, in the 100 as well. Dedicated solely this offseason to football. If he doesn't make the jump that we expect him to make, I don't know if he ever will, or at least if he doesn't make a drastic leap this year, when will the drastic leap come is my question. I'm with you. Got to take a next step. Who do you got, Kerb?
Yeah, it's time for this quarterback to take the next step. You're going on about 2.5 years of starting. Cade Klubnik needs to elevate his game. There's no Phil Moff in the backfield. There's no Will Shipley in the backfield. Clemson's probably not going to have a dynamic running game this year. It all hinges on you and if you can elevate your game to the next level. We've seen times, especially in the 2024 season, where he makes NFL-level throws, NFL-level reads, but far too many times it's been like, Clemson can't really move the ball down the field, or what the hell was that throw? He needs to knock those out. With this much experience that you have, it's time to elevate your game.
I thought he played exceptionally well against Texas, but I need to see you elevate against great teams. Mm-hmm. I don't need to see you, Cade Klubnik's leading the last 8 weeks in yards per game against, looks at the schedule, the likes of Virginia and Duke. I got to see you ball like you did against Texas, against the higher caliber of football teams. I think it was like an 18 for 31 for 165 against Georgia, something along that range. We can't be performing like that against the big-time football teams. I did think he took a step midway through the year last year and started to play much better, but I think if you were a skeptic of Clemson football and of Cade Klubnik, you would point to the schedule saying that's why, more so than the progression of the athlete.
Right, and that's why I'm saying, like, it's crucial that you elevate yourself once again and take another step, because Clemson's supposed to be a top three team in the country this year. Clemson's supposed to be a national title favorite. They're supposed to run away with the ACC. They didn't do any of those last year, and you need Cade Klubnik to be that much better if you're going to do so.
I got a coach here making my list of got to take the next step, and he's a friend of the show, Dan Lanning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think on paper Dan's got the 8th, 9th, maybe 10th best team in college football this year. I don't think on paper they are a national championship winning football program. I'm not going to put those expectations on him. However, I do think it's reasonable that first of all, his fan base demand or require they make another playoff this year, because the schedule is that, right? The schedule and his roster is good enough to demand 11-1 as a fan base. I think that's reasonable. I also think that puts them as like a 7 or 8 seed in the college football playoff, guys. And I think it will be a disappointment as a seven seed, if they were to lose to like an LSU in round one of a college football playoff. If that were the case, I think that would be a disappointment for that football program. I think that is a next step for him. If and when you get to the college football playoff this year, I think it's required that you win at least one game. Is that too much to ask?
No,
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
That's the next step for Dan, and I think he's got to do it. We can't just keep making playoffs, Bubba. Mm-hmm. When we get there, we gotta be able to win one of those games.
I also have a coach on my list, but I think it's a little different, because when I say this coach needs to take the next step, I'm not talking about this coach needs to go on and move further into the playoffs. I'm more so talking about the next step in maintaining the success, and it's Kenny Dillingham at Arizona State. I think that he has to take the next step in making sure that this success is sustainable at this program, because the Big 12 is searching for somebody to do it, or at least we're searching for somebody in the Big 12 to kind of take over this conference and get a chokehold on it and say, this is our conference. We're going to be the competitive team out of here. Arizona State shows promise of doing that. They return some key pieces, but they also lose some key pieces that make some questions of, are they going to be a playoff caliber team at this conference? I think Kenny Dillingham has to take the next step forward and making sure that this isn't just a one-time thing. This isn't just a blip on the radar for the Sun Devils. This is something that is here to stay.
Next stop, consistency
for
Kenny Dillingham and Arizona State.
I'll ride off with Jay Will saying Sam Levitt, the quarterback, has to take the next step for them. Cam Scatabo, it's very similar to how Clemson's situation is. You don't have a dynamic running back in your backfield this year, at least not to the level that Cam Scatabo was. Sam Levitt showed a lot of promise in the Big 12 championship. He looked really good at times against Texas. It's time to consistently give that through 12 weeks for Arizona State, because they're going to need you to do so.
How about Hugh Freeze?
Oh, I have him too.
We talked about it Tuesday. If he doesn't improve, I might be thinking about firing him.
Yeah.
if we're 3 years at Auburn averaging 6-6, you probably got to go.
It's not that you're not even delivering. You haven't shown promise. And we said this earlier in the week. There's no signature win. There's not like, hey, at least things are getting better. It's just been consistently meh.
We're always about like trying to gauge temperatures of fan bases. As a non-biased, I don't really care about the outcomes of Auburn. I'm going to analyze it as best as I possibly can. There are 8 mandatory wins on that schedule, in my opinion.
Mandatory, wow.
If I were an Auburn fan, I would look at that and say, I'm reasonable for demanding 8 wins.
So is that saying if he doesn't go 8-4, he's fired?
No, I'm saying if he doesn't go 8-4, we're rightfully pissed off.
Okay.
Now, I wholeheartedly believe if he turns in another 6-6 or around 500, we got to have a serious conversation, a real conversation about maybe getting rid of this guy.
Hey, 6-6 accomplishes his goal, though. Just got to make a bowl this year.
The bowl comment was crazy.
The more I think about that quote, though, the more I think it was just Hugh Freeze setting himself up to be able to, at the end of the year, potentially say, oh, we went way past expectations. Like, if they do go, if they go 8-4.
Again, that would piss me off. If I were an Auburn fan and my coach was out here curtailing expectations to, we got to go bowling, just so he can make me feel happy when he exceeds his expectations with an 8-4 season, I'd be pissed.
Yeah.
No, I'm not saying it's right.
That's not what I signed up for. Not when the other guy. By the way, all that recruiting momentum that Auburn fans love on, and rightfully so, 2 top 10 classes in a row. Have y'all seen what Alabama's doing right now in 26?
Mm-hmm. They're building up.
You know, big bro is big broing again in on the recruiting trail. So it ain't like you can just mediocrely pass your way through here and everybody like, okay, at least he's not Brian Harsin.
How about this coach? This one feels almost unfair because they've gotten pretty much to the top of the sport. But it's time for Steve Sarkisian to take that next step. Steve Sarkisian's kind of in that area that Kirby Smart was from 2017 to like 2021, where it was, you're one of the top coaches in the country. You're going to consistently have one of the best teams in the country. Everyone believes in you, but you haven't delivered on a national title yet. And I feel like that's going to be his next step. And if you go another 2 or 3 seasons without Texas winning a national title, there's going to be some Texas fans looking around going, is he the right answer? Is he holding us back? Which the answer is obviously no, but...
I have a Texas player. And it's not Arch Manning, but I have Ryan Wingo on here.
Yes. Mm.
I think that Ryan Wingo is another one of these wide receivers that they lost 2 really good weapons last year, and he was stellar as a true freshman. He made some big plays for them, and he looks the part as somebody that can be that number one option in an offense, but got to take that step forward in officially being that guy in that offense. And, you know, the way Steve Sarkisian runs his offense and having Arch Manning around, and also that running back room kind of getting their depth back, I think all of those things are going to help him out, but I think that he's got to take a step forward and really elevating that offense and keeping their receiving game strong.
By the way, I think it's like 5 or 6 years before we're like, hey, Sark, you better win or we're getting rid of you.
A title?
Yeah. I think we got to – bro, they were bad for like a decade and a half. They were not good.
You think that would make him more apropos to keeping him around, though, because like, guys, you remember what we were doing before him?
No. Yeah, you were going 7-5. At least he's got you to – like, we're guaranteed 10 wins. We're guaranteed to be in the national conversation. Guaranteed.
You right got to think that it's like a Ryan Day situation where like getting cracks at it.
Ryan had 7 years before they were like, hey, buddy, you lose to Tennessee at home after laying an egg against Michigan, we'll fire your ass.
Right.
That's how long.
And the argument there is
it will take that long here.
Yeah, and the argument is always there. Like, you're always – or, like, you at least think and foresee them always having a chance at winning it with him as a head coach.
I think Sark would also have to lose 4 games in a row to Texas A&M for them to really go, yes. Like, what the hell is going on? Yes. Just get this guy.
It would have to get that bad.
Right.
But I think he's – they were so bad under Charlie Strong, Tom Herman, that it just – 10 wins, man, come on, we're not going to get rid of you for that right now, I don't think. But again, you go 7-8 years of, man, we're just going to be a 10-2 football team that gets our doors blown off, which they didn't. But we lose by 7 every year in the quarterfinals. Mm-hmm. What the hell is that? Eventually, it will get old. I'm going back to the players well here. Now, this young man is being projected as a first-round draft pick at defensive tackle, and I covered him. I know he's a great player. I know he's a blue-chip prospect, but he has not played like that, and they need him to. It's LT Overton at Alabama.
Yeah.
I know LT Overton could be a first-round draft pick as a defensive tackle, like 3 technique, being 6'4", 285 pounds, an elite athlete, twitched-up freak, okay? I know he could be that, but – they're kind of playing him, and last year it felt like they were playing him in that hybrid defensive end, defensive tackle role, and I just don't know if that's where he's going to eat at most. So if LT Overton's going to play his way into a first-round draft pick, he's going to have to take a pretty drastic leap from last year to this year.
Even though he's a veteran player and he's been around for quite a while, I still feel like this he falls into this category because this is what was being discussed about him going into year two for him. And just kind of the overall setting of the defense by Harold Perkins.
Yeah.
We got to take that next step, man. We got to be this NFL football player, this NFL prospect that we are, that we can't, that we have the ceiling to do this. We have all the tools around us. And I think that there were some finicky things going on with him and the defense overall. But I think this year, him and Whit Weeks, both of them, a strong linebacker unit, he's got to show up and show out for them.
Did Weeks get hurt in their bowl game?
Yes. I thought he got hurt.
Is he going to be okay?
I don't know.
We need to look this up.
We watched that game in New Orleans. I think like he hurt his ankle or something. Like got carted off the field.
Yeah. I hope it wasn't soft tissue, but I think it might have been.
I mean, the fact that we haven't really heard reports that he's going to be out for a period of time.
It says he suffered a dislocated ankle and fractured fibula. Fine. He is expected to make a full recovery and not expected to miss any games this season.
All right. Chill. So you're good there.
Oh, he just dislocated.
That did worry me.
Just dislocated his ankle.
Yeah,
broke
that sounds
leg.
Like a nasty injury.
No, honest to God, dislocating nowadays is better for you than anything else.
Yeah,
dislocating and breaking is way better.
Yeah,
than
but
like
the fibula
a severe
part
high ankle sprain
is what.
Oh, the fib. Yeah, we out here fibbling. That's a little bit much. Is the tib the inside or the outside?
I always forget. Fib? I believe so.
No, I know that there's the two bones in your leg.
No. I'm trying to remember. I don't remember honestly.
Or is that the front and the side? Like the front and the outside of your legs, right?
There's two
bones.
It's
like the shin bone and then like the outside.
Yeah. Either way, I've took anatomy a long time ago.
This one might catch you off guard because he had a great freshman year, but not as great as the other guys that I think he is in contention for. I think Cam Coleman's got to take a leap in year two.
I almost put him on my list.
And here's why. I do think Jeremiah Smith's the best sophomore wide receiver in college football. I think he is in his own little class. But right next to him, literally, on the cover of college football, in a very similar class, is Ryan Williams. And then over here, distant, with the same amount of talent, had he stayed healthy, would be in the class, is Cam Coleman. I think those three wide receivers are dynamic, 1-1 in any given class type of prospects. They will be. But Cam Coleman's not in that conversation right now. People don't talk about him in that conversation because I think he was banged up last year.
Well, also, in his defense.
And he plays at Auburn.
Cam Coleman didn't have a Ryan Williams-esque moment this
no.
year. No. And he didn't do what Jeremiah Smith did in the playoff front. Like, if Ohio State loses to Tennessee round one and Ryan Williams doesn't do what he did against Georgia, you could make the argument that those two aren't on the cover. They would still be incredible players,
yeah,
but the hype around them would not be as much. Cam Coleman didn't have either one of those moments, so I think that's kind of where it is. I think you're right, though. He does need to take a step forward, but I don't think that he's not getting the buzz because of its necessity. Like, Auburn doesn't hold candle to what Alabama and Ohio State are right now.
Like, I think Jeremiah Smith and Cam Coleman would be the first X receiver taken off their board in any class in a vacuum. And I think Ryan Williams would be the first Z taken off the board in a vacuum in any class that doesn't include Justin Jefferson in that first conversation
right.
or that last conversation. Because that guy's a great Z. But, I mean, that's how good I think Cam Coleman is. And, again, to the average fan listening to this today, they think Jeremiah Smith and Ryan Williams over here and Cam Coleman's over here as a really, really good wide receiver. He's a great one.
Absolutely.
Who else?
I've got a guy who took a massive step in 2023 and then proceeded to fall down the stairs in 2024. Mike Norvell has to take another step. Not necessarily because we're close to where we are, but you have to take a step forward because otherwise you're probably not going to have a job come the end of 2025.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one I have.
I don't have any more.
I got two obvious ones, I felt like. I mean, the most obvious I'll say for last, but Kevin Jennings has got to take another step, the quarterback for SMU. And it's not even like, hey, can you be more explosive or can you be more dynamic? Can you be a little bit more boring? You know what I mean? Like, can you just chicken and vegetables your way out of a couple of those drastic, catastrophic turnovers that you had a year ago? We know you're a great playmaker. We know you're great with your legs. We know you're great on the run, throwing the football, getting the ball downfield, being explosive. But, like, can we eliminate some of the holy shit, what just happened to our offense? We're back on defense now type of plays. And if so, I think you're back to where you were last year at SMU, because I do think that little or that lightly of the ACC. Now, the last player on this list, and perhaps the one who has to take the biggest step for his team to meet the expectations that they have preseason. Any guesses?
What conference?
Big Ten.
I think I know where you're going.
No, take a guess.
Is it a quarterback?
Yes, it is.
Was he a freshman last year?
No, he was not.
I don't know then.
It's Drew Aller.
Mm. Oh.
If Penn State's going to live up to top three preseason expectations, it's going to be because their quarterback outplayed what he did last year, okay? And he's going to do it without a first-round draft pick at tight end and Tyler Warren. And with his best wide receiver being two individuals that just transferred in there by the name of Kyron Hudson and Devontae Ross and a redshirt freshman named Tysier Denmark. Any of those names ring a bell for anybody on this stage?
I've heard of Denmark before.
Okay, so they need a lot out of dudes that don't nobody know a lot about. So if they're going to get a lot out of those people, it's because Drew Aller played a lot better than he played last year.
I think another one you could, staying in the Big Ten, another one you could probably say needs to elevate their game this year is Dylan Raiola. He looked pretty good against Nebraska, had some promising games. He has a freshman, but if Nebraska's going to do what they're going to do or what Matt Rhule thinks they're going to do next year, need to have a better season.
Are you just being a good teammate right now?
I'm being a great
teammate. You're just being a great teammate right now. Hey, did you know that someone tried to poach Dylan Raiola this offseason?
I'm not surprised.
You're not?
No. I mean, think about this.
The Poets Society?
Dead Poets Society.
If you're a college football coach right now and you're saying, okay, we need a young quarterback that's promising and is probably poachable, let's go to the kid that was once committed to Ohio State, then commit to Georgia, and then all of a sudden decommits and goes to Nebraska because he wanted to build his own legacy. Shoot. That kid's probably pretty poachable, just assuming that his recruitment had some dollar signs involved. So I'm not surprised that there were probably teams coming and knocking and calling Dylan Raiola.
It goes before that, though. He played at four different high schools.
Right.
This guy has been switching teams for his entire career, so much so that he moved across the country to play at a different high school when he thought he was going to Georgia. So, yeah, I mean, by that basis alone, you would think, oh, yeah, that guy, we could probably nab him.
We could probably convince him to come join us.
So let me read the quotes that this actually came from. I guess Matt Rhule was asked about Dylan Raiola on the Jim Rome show. Said, quote, man, he is in such a good place. He has so many eyes on him. He has the weight and the pressure of an entire fan base, an entire state of a blue blood like Nebraska. First year, you come in to me. If you're a big-time recruit, it's about learning how to handle the pressure, learning how to handle the frustrating moments. I think he did that really well. The highs and lows, we finished the year on a real uptick. And everyone reached out to him. He could have taken the easy way out and left and gone to the portal and gone to some place where he could start over, maybe where he doesn't have to do as much himself. But he chose to stick it out and fight and came back. I've been excited to see where he's at. So that last little part right there, he could have taken the easy way out and left and gone to the portal and gone to some place where he could start over, maybe where he doesn't have to do as much himself. That tells me a better roster tried to poach him. This wasn't like Tulane trying to poach him.
No. And I mean,
this was a big boy.
I would say this was probably USC, Miami maybe. There were even reports that Alabama was sniffing around in the quarterback world this year, so I wouldn't put it past them to at least make a phone call.
It's got Texas Tech written all over it. Does
Texas Tech have that much better of a roster than Nebraska?
Maybe.
But see, like, here's my thing. You mentioned Miami. I don't think Miami necessarily does, but why isn't Miami doing that? If Miami wasn't involved in them trying to poach Dylan Raiola, why aren't you? You're spending $4 million on a one-year quarterback, $4.5 million on a one-year quarterback who's coming off of a major injury.
6 months.
Why are we not trying to get Dylan Raiola for the next 2 or 3 years? Why are we not going after that one? If we're going to spend money at the position, why are we doing it for one-year rentals only?
Yeah, it's probably a good guess. It probably was a school like Miami or, you know, there was rumors that he was going to one and done the Nebraska thing and then come back to Georgia.
There were rumors.
I'm not going to lie. There were rumors about it. I didn't never believe him.
No.
But there were rumors about it, mostly from his camp, from my understanding. There's been lingering things. Y'all made the best point about the transitions in high school, like all of the moves for various different reasons, okay, all of which I guess justifiable if you really – like nailed it down. There were some people that would just go through it and they would defend every single one. And at some point I was just like, well, okay. I'm sure you'll be able to defend whatever the next move is, mm-hmm. right? So there was that whole thing going on in high school. I just don't understand, like, the pressure of the blue blood recruit at Nebraska. That thing was a little bit weird to me. The pressure and the if Dylan Raiola left Nebraska has nothing to do with pressure. It has everything to do with the fact that they had an NAD offense last year. What does NAD stand for? Not a dude. They had not a dude on the offensive side of the football last year at all. Go watch Nebraska tape. I did. I got notes on it. We're going to pump a film study out right before the season on Dylan Raiola. There was no help for that joker. All right, as a true freshman, he was playing real football at the quarterback position, like really progressing through reads, playing the position on time, getting the ball out early, playing with anticipation, just no help, not at all. Now, they did some help this offseason. They went and tried to get some overpaid for Dane Key. I hope he helps out a lot, but if he leaves Nebraska, it's going to be because there ain't no help around him. And I think he alluded to some of that, right, where he doesn't have to do as much himself. He's alluding to it. They know the deal, so he's realistic about this. I was just a little caught off guard, but, like, we got people trying to poach Dylan Raiola, and if they were, why didn't they successfully do so? Because he's tied in Nebraska. He's got family ties there. Mm-hmm. He's obviously – and the NIL check. I'm sure he's not cheap. I'm sure he's not underpaid at Nebraska.
Definitely not either of those.
Yeah. And the Adidas tie. I have wondered about this. Why is Adidas investing into players – I get the Dylan Raiola thing. He plays in an Adidas school, and he's Mr. Patrick Mahomes Jr. I understand why he wants to sign with Adidas. But why is Adidas spending money on players like Tyler Atkinson and Tristan Keyes in high school right now? Those kids ain't going to an Adidas school unless Tristan Keyes ends up at Miami.
Long-term investments, probably.
A long-term investment that's going to require you to take 3 years off of association with that athlete while they're laying in bed with another company?
I guess.
I'm not asking you guys. I run into these questions all the time in college sports. Like, that doesn't make any business sense to me. Why are y'all doing that? It happens all the time. We had a licensing agreement with A&M where that company's paying $17 million a year over the next 10 years to stream softball games.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, how are you making your money back on this? I don't know. So there's a lot of those that I don't get, that being one of them. I guess my question about this, and the reason it was on the show notes, is what do you guys think about Nebraska this season? What are your expectations for them? Because like I did with the Auburn schedule, I went through this schedule today, and I think there are 9 should-win games on this schedule heading into year 3 for Matt Rhule. You should beat Cincy. You should damn sure beat Akron, Houston, Christian, and Michigan State. You should beat Maryland. You maybe should beat Minnesota. You damn sure should beat Northwestern, UCLA. Mm-hmm. The only questionable games on this schedule, Minnesota, Iowa, USC, Penn State, and Michigan. I can tell you right now, Matt Rhule, you can go into this season and you can lose USC, Penn State, Michigan, and you should still have 8 wins on your schedule.
Yeah,
I think.
I don't think it's unreasonable to expect 8-4 out of this team. And again, with everything we've heard, Dylan Raiola is taking his second. He should be taking one of those next steps. Matt Rhule has said time and time again, it took me 3 years at Temple. It took me 3 years at Baylor. Should be taking me 3 years now. You're entering year 3. Like, 8-4 should be what the expectation is.
Floor.
Yeah, I mean, and that sounds lofty to say because Nebraska made their first bowl game for the first time in like 10 years last year. Mm-hmm. But 8-4, if everything about what Matt Rhule has advertised himself as, if everything that Dylan Raiola has advertised himself as, if everything that Dane Key has been advertised as is true and lives up to it, 8-4 is the baseline.
Well, and I mean, it should be the baseline because while it is the year 3, that would be, one, proving that you can continue to build up this program and you can make them better and you're showing improvement, but that would also set you up for a perfect window in 2026. To where, ideally, Dylan Raiola is still on your roster, assuming someone doesn't successfully poach him next offseason. And maybe now, at that point, you are the third best team in the Big Ten.
Also, beat a top 25 team this year.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if they're ranked 25th. Beat them. End that streak, first of all. That's priority number one, in my opinion.
Yeah. Guys, I agree with Brian Kelly. This might be a first in show history. Now, it's a... It's a layup take, but it is what it is. He was asked about the House versus NCAA settlement that passed this week. And like I said, I thought he had the right answer on this one. He said, quote, progress over perfection. There are going to be a lot of things that are going to have to be tweaked along the way, but this is progress for college athletics, and in particular the sports like football and basketball. We needed some guardrails. We needed clear communication as to, you know, what the expectation is, and I think we got a little bit of that. It's exactly what I said on Tuesday, or maybe it was Monday, when the news broke about House versus NCAA actually being settled. Is, look, I don't know if Deloitte's actually going to have power. I don't know if there's going to be any rogue agents out here in the world of college football with these new rules. I don't know if there are going to be people who spend all year long trying to circumvent these things and cheat their way to a good recruiting class. However, at least they're having to cheat. At least they're having to circumvent. At least they're having to find ways to win in the margins, where as used to it was, hey, who can run the biggest super PAC? Who can get in as much pay for play as we possibly can? Now at least we have some guardrails you got to get around.
Yes, and I think that this is, it's clearly, I think we can all agree, a step in the right direction at the very least. It's all going to pertain to whether or not, like you said, Deloitte can have any power. Because if we remember, about 2020 and 2021, when this thing first dropped that, you know, players get paid for NIL, there would be a clearinghouse, we're like, this is great, this is all going to work out. And then we got to 22 and 23, and teams were looking around going, oh, no one's regulating this shit, we can do whatever we want.
Yeah,
I don't want that same thing to be happening with Deloitte, but at least like you said, there is some structure right now that appears to be coming. Whether or not that structure is going to hold at all is yet to be seen, but it's definitely a step in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, I think that now that you've gotten here, I think if you made it to where there was only one transfer portal window, I think there would be quite a few issues that are resolved, or ideally resolved, what we expect to be resolved as far as what our concerns are for college football. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's great that there is some type of structure, and I think you're getting to a point where the list of things that we think are wrong with this sport are getting a little bit shorter.
Look, like I said earlier, we're going to have still in this system, we're going to have rogue agents. Mm-hmm. We're going to have people who
always
are going out there trying to do something that they're not supposed to do, circumventing the rule systems to find an advantage. However, again, at least now we got somebody to try to go get those people that are cheating or those people that are having a significant advantage in player acquisition. I don't think there's ever been a time in college football, however, where there hasn't been someone with a significant advantage. You know,
and there never will be.
There, ideally, in a magical world, there is. In a magical world, there is a system in place where no one's cheating.
We live in a world, look at the NFL.
Yeah.
Look at the NFL where there's more regulation on that, what you can pay the players, how many players you can take a year, how many players you can have on a roster, who can sign what. The Browns have sucked my entire life. The Jets aren't good. For the most part, there's been the same four or five teams that have always seemed to have that advantage. Now those teams rotate every now and then, and that's what's happened in college football. I don't think we're ever going to have a world where it's, hey, we have 132 teams out here and any one of these teams can win the Natty. That's not a realistic expectation, unfortunately.
I also don't know if it's good for the sport to have such parity. And listen to me here, okay? I think NBA was at its popularity when they had dynasties. I think the NBA was at its highest point when everybody was like, shit, when is someone going to beat Golden State? Mm. You know? I thought most people tuned in to see the great teams, not to see seven different champions every other year.
Hmm.
You know? I don't know if that's – like, people say they want a Cinderella story. Bullshit. You don't want Holy Cross playing for a college basketball championship. You don't. You want to see Duke versus North Carolina. I know you do. The ratings tell me you do.
I think teams want Cinderella – fans want Cinderella stories every so often.
Yeah.
I think fans
want Cinderella stories until it Fs up the outcome of did we actually get the best team.
Right. Every now and then when we get the TCUs or Cincinnati makes the Super Bowl, like that's fun. But when it's every year, it's like, I don't know. I mean, the NBA is a perfect example of this now. Like the Pacers and OKC. OKC was a great team all year, but it's again, it's two completely different teams that we've seen.
Yeah. I don't think anybody would have ideally selected the Indiana Pacers to be in the NBA Finals this year, but they're two games away from winning the championship, so what can you say about it?
Should I get heated up?
Oh, are you getting heated up over?
I don't know. I think I'm gonna temper my tone here because I'm talking about a colleague. I don't know this person. I don't even know who wrote this article, but at the end of this segment, I'm probably going to sound pretty pretentious and sound like I'm coming after somebody. So I'm going to get out in front of it and tell myself, calm down. Calm down. Because this is a topic that I see differently than everybody else, apparently, and I don't like this. And everybody else is like, oh, it don't matter. You still got to play football. So Michigan timeline for ruling and potential punishments has been released. I'm going to do a couple things in this here segment while trying to maintain my sanity. I want to give you the news that was actually reported today, and I want to give my opinion on the journalism used to relay this news. First and foremost, let's give you the news. In the next 30 to 90 days, the NCAA will give out punishments for the Michigan sign-stealing scandal, with potential punishments listed as follows. Potential further suspensions for Sharon Moore. Remember, he suspended himself for week 3 and 4 of the regular season, ironically missing the 2 games against Power 4 teams, coaching or not coaching the mid-major games, and then coming back for, I think, their 5th game against Oklahoma, another Power 4 football team. But nonetheless, I digress. Could potentially be further suspending Sharon Moore. They could potentially vacate wins from the 2024 season, and they could additionally put in recruiting restrictions, monetary fines, and are discussing whether or not a postseason ban play or could be in play. Now, the postseason ban, I'm going to go ahead and tell you right now, ain't going to happen because there is this new, I guess theory or new thought process, which I agree with wholeheartedly, that current athletes should not be punished for the transgressions of previous athletes. So they're not going to punish postseason play of the kids on the roster right now for what happened with the kids on the roster in 2023. I think we all wholeheartedly agree that's probably right.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, that's, we think that's fair. So that's the news, okay? The news, again, potential further suspensions for Sharon Moore, potential vacating of wins in the 24 season, recruiting restrictions, monetary fines, potential postseason ban play. What are you giggling about?
The 24 season's funny.
Yeah, vacating wins.
We're going to take away the wins after you won the natty.
You still get the natty, though. They're just going to make it a natty with an asterisk that has a subjected win total. That's the news. Let's talk about how the news was actually reported, however. Granted, I understand that what I'm going to be reading to you, the quotes that I'm going to be reading from this article, was written by a Michigan-based team site. Okay, so perhaps this isn't me necessarily criticizing the journalism, more providing a non-objective form of reporting this news, or at least trying to. I want to read a couple things to you. Quote, there have been multiple suspensions, firing, and resignations within the football program since the news of this scandal broke. But Michigan did also win a national title. Some would say that's more than a serviceable trade-off. That article, or that paragraph right there, written by a journalist covering Michigan, answers any question I ever had of, is this a worthy trade-off? Are you okay with your team just cheating and creating a massive scandal that leads to firings, that leads to suspensions, that leads to potential vacating of wins? Are you okay with that as long as you win a national title? Resounding hell yeah up there up in Ann Arbor.
And before,
for sure.
I was going to say, before we like point fingers at Ann Arbor, 95% of colleges would be like, yeah, we don't give a shit.
Don't. 95%, I'm okay with it. Especially if you haven't won in 50 years. Mm-hmm. If you haven't won a national title in 50 years, you can sell your soul for one. We're cool with it. Resounding yes. More than a serviceable trade-off, in fact. More than. So, yeah, in case you were wondering, Michigan folks don't care. Trade the integrity for the championship, 100%. Suspensions, firing, scandals, as long as we win. Another quote I got for you. Quote, some of these potential penalties might feel steep to many inside and around Ann Arbor. It's simply a baseline, and it remains to be seen if the NCAA tries to bring the hammer down on the Wolverines. There's a ton of options on the table at the moment. Michigan fans and college football fans as a whole are ready to put this scandal in the past.
Ooh, don't know about that.
You guys ready to put this one back?
No, I would rather
not. You guys ready
to
just ignore this one? Hey, everybody around college football, y'all ready to stop talking about how Michigan cheated? Y'all good?
Not yet.
I'm not ready. I mean, it's been since 2023 we've been talking about this shit. And everybody just got, it ain't that big of a deal. It ain't that big of a deal. Nah. We ain't worried about it. Biggest cheating scandal in college football in a long time, but we ain't worried about it.
I'm sure that they're tired of talking about it because there's every single time someone brings it up, you feel like they're judging your national title or questioning your national title and the validity of it. So, yeah, I'm sure they are tired of talking about it at Michigan.
And I was going to say, I didn't have a problem with this article up until that point. Because, I mean, look, college websites of your team are going to be inherently biased. That's understood. The Tennessee website's biased for Tennessee. The Georgia website's biased for Georgia. That's understandable. But when you say Michigan fans as well as everyone else agrees with us. Brother, you're being very presumptuous right now.
Rather presumptuous. The rest of the college football fans as a whole, nobody.
Everyone agrees with us. We're Michigan. We did nothing wrong.
Yeah.
Cry about it.
My whole thing with this is, and I'm going to say that this was completely worth it for Michigan, but not just because it ultimately ended up in a national title for them, but because they picked the right window to do this in. Mm. Of all the teams that you could have picked to do this with, you picked the one that could go all the way and could win a national title. And that means that, and because we've seen what Michigan has been the last couple of years. It's not up to that caliber. There's been quite a drop-off. There's been a steep drop-off, if you ask me. And that drop-off was not because there was all of a sudden cheating allegations around that program. Like, the caliber of players you have on that roster isn't because Jim Harbaugh and the staff got accused of stealing signs. No, that's not why. There was going to be a drop-off after that season, regardless of if you won a national title or not. So the fact that you picked the right one, you ended up guessing the right year to do this, and it worked out in your favor, then yeah, it is worth it because you haven't been very good the last 2 years.
I think reports of them stealing signs started like week five of that 2023 season. Does that sound about right? So let's say they vacate the first four wins of that season and the national champion in 2024 has four vacated wins.
Well, correct me if I'm
wrong.
I
don't care about what Michigan fans think. What does the rest of the world of college football look at towards that 2023 season? If the NCAA deems we have to vacate four of those wins, what do we do with that?
And you didn't legitimately win a
title. They'll view it the same way that they have always late. Yeah, you won, but you won cheating. But correct me if I'm wrong. That report says they'd vacate 2024 wins.
The season of 2024, the year they won the title, right?
No. They won the title in the season of 23.
Oh, so they're going to vacate last year? I don't give a shit
about
that.
Yeah, that's why I was like laughing
about
it.
That's stupid because...
Stupid as hell. Why are you vacating the team they went 7-5?
Article, it mentions how they don't vacate a national title because they don't... Or they don't do postseason bans because they don't want to punish players on the roster that weren't part of that team. So why would you punish last year's team for what the team before them did?
Yeah, you're going to take Davis Warren's wins? That's crazy.
That's what I'm thinking. That's why I was so shocked when it said 2024. Like, that has nothing to do with 2023. So, but again, we accepted a while ago that this was not going to be as viewed as earth-shattering
I am still disappointed, though, that the chat can't decipher the difference between cheating to get players onto your team and then cheating to get the outcomes of the field or when the players on the field to change. Can we not see the difference between that? One is cheating to get players onto our team. The other is cheating while the players that are on our team are on the field. There's two totally different types of cheating, in my opinion.
I mean, yeah, but cheating is still cheating.
Cheating is still cheating.
So there is that argument.
I'm with you.
But it's also when you're cheating to obscene levels like no one else is. That's where the issue lies, I think.
Yeah, when we're, again, like, the whole, I got a dude in the box with binoculars trying to steal the opponent's signs while we're playing football. That's one version of sign stealing. And then there's another one who's got, like, 35 transactions on Venmo paying staffers to go advance scout bowl games of teams that we might play in the playoff. Again, I feel like I'm running in circles talking crazy, but... If I can't tell you the difference between those two, if you can't see the difference between those two, then again, there's no point in us arguing about this because we're constantly going to see this differently. SEC win totals, boys?
Let's do it.
This will be fun. So here's what we're going to do. All lines are provided by FanDuel tonight. There are 16 SEC member schools. We're going to take a look at the SEC win totals, and here's how this is played. Each of us will give you three teams in three separate categories, a total of 9 teams per member on the stage today. We got three locks. These are teams we feel confident will either hit or land short of the win total number. All right, we have three stayaways. These are three totals we are not touching for whatever reason we give you. Then three coin tosses. These are three teams that are going to be teetering on that wins and loss line all year long. First example of a lock, I got Arkansas as a lock to land under the win total of 5.5 wins because this is simple to me. I have to find 7 guaranteed losses on this Arkansas schedule. Easy as pie. I got them right here for you. Ole Miss, Notre Dame, Tennessee, A&M, Auburn, LSU, Texas, L's. Now, if you want to argue and say, hey, maybe Arkansas beats Auburn, I got you. Maybe Missouri beats Arkansas. I don't think that's too crazy of a maybe. No. Give me Arkansas locked in 4-8 this year.
It's a pretty good lock. I would take that one.
I took a different lock for the under. I think Mississippi State is a lock for the under this year at 3.5. I think that they are a lock to win 3 games this year because they have Tennessee, Texas A&M, Florida, Texas, Arkansas, Georgia, Missouri, Ole Miss.
Buddy, you don't think they can clean sweep their non-con this year?
They're
I know Toledo's on it.
No. Arizona State. Arizona State is on the non-conference. So, yeah, Southern Miss, Alcorn State, Northern Illinois. Northern Illinois even. We saw what they did at Notre Dame last year. But the fact that Notre Dame is one of your – the fact that Arizona State is one of your non-conference games, that's when I was like, oh, yeah, this is a lock for 3 wins right here.
I'm locking them as an over.
I took the over as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, I'm locking them as an over. Give me the 3 non-con wins, and then I got you sneaking somebody in the
That's
SEC.
What I was going to say. And I have
somebody in this conference is going to get snuck by Mississippi State this
year. It's been 20 years since an SEC team went 2 years in a row without a single conference win. Mississippi State is going to get 1 team. And if you beat Southern Miss, Alcorn State, and NIU, you're at your 4 wins. If you just get 1
just
conference win.
Just nab somebody.
Nab them. I'm buying it. I'm going Mississippi State over.
I mean, they got somebody in November that they can get.
The Egg Bowl every year is close.
Yeah.
I mean, you can sneak up on Ole Miss. They've done it before.
I got my last lock for you. I'm hammering Kentucky's under this year at 4.5.
Oh, you're an under as a play, huh?
Yeah. Is Kentucky winning at least 2 of these games? This is what it boils down to me. Kentucky's got to win 2 of these, and I don't think they do. Ole Miss, South Carolina, Georgia, Texas, Tennessee, Auburn, Florida, Vandy, and Louisville. Can they nab 2 of those 8 opponents?
I don't know, dude.
I don't think so.
I don't know, dude.
I don't think so.
I would put that in the
I'll give you Vandy.
There.
I'll give you Vandy. And that means you got to beat one of Auburn or Louisville. And you're going to the Whisperer's house, by the way.
So that's not very daunting.
Well, no, he whispers. The crowd doesn't.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. My lock, and this one is one of these we've said on segments before. I'm going to hammer this until proven wrong. Kirby Smart has had only 1 season with 3 regular season losses. That was his first season. And he's coming off, you know, arguably his worst season since 2020. Still mustered up a 10-2 season there. Yes, the schedule's tougher. The roster's has questions around it. So what? Every single team in the SEC has the exact same thing going on. I'm buying Kirby Smart being able to get Georgia 10 wins until I'm proven wrong otherwise. So Georgia over 9.5 is a lock for me.
I think the biggest lock for the over, in my opinion, for this conference is Oklahoma. But you're a 6-win team as soon as John Mateer walked through the doors. You're a 7-win team as soon as Venables is your defensive guy. Like, that's 7. That should get you 7 wins right there. Improve quarterback play. Defense is going to be just fine. That typically wins in this conference. So the fact that they're put at 6-5 or at 6.5 wins, I think they can get to 7. I think Oklahoma can very easily get to 7.
It's the second toughest schedule in the conference, maybe the toughest.
It's all tough.
Yeah. It's a tough schedule.
Yeah. I'm going Auburn under 7.5 wins.
For a lock?
A lock.
Yeah.
Alabama, Georgia, A&M in College Station, Oklahoma and Norman at Vandy. I know that's not a tough one, but that's also assuming that they go undefeated against Arkansas, Missouri, Kentucky, and Baylor and Waco. There's definitely 5 losses on this schedule for them this year. I'm buying the under for Auburn.
All right, we're on to our stayaways. All right, these are football teams that you are not touching with a 10-foot pole on this this over-under wins. I'm not touching Georgia this year. I'm not touching it.
Understand.
I think there are 4 games that could go anywhere from 1-3 to 4-0. They will not go 0-4 in that 4-game gauntlet that they got. It's spread out or throughout the season. But I do think there is some variance there. I think there's a chance that Georgia is 10-2. I think there's a chance that Georgia's 11-1. I think there's a chance that Georgia's 9-3 at the end of the regular season.
I'm not.
It's just
I'm
too much of a variance for me to bet one way or the other.
I'm not buying 1-3 in those 4 games. That's why I have them as the over.
Yeah.
I would be completely understanding if it was 2-2. You go 500 in that, but 1-3 just doesn't sound like a Kirby Smart team.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jalen.
See, for me, Kentucky is one of these do not touch. Kentucky at 4.5 is a scary line for me.
Stoopy coaching for his job up there.
I know.
Against the wall, Stoops, watch out.
And I think that Stoops beat Ole Miss last year despite the fact that their season was really bad. I mean, who's to say that they can't do that again this year? Zach Calzada has proven that he has some type of magic in his game. I mean, he beat Alabama at Texas A&M. So I just think that there's a scenario where Kentucky could certainly get to 5 wins.
Yeah, well, I couldn't legally drink when Zach Calzada beat Texas, beat Alabama.
Yeah, neither
could
I.
I was still legally drinking when Texas beat, when Texas A&M beat Alabama.
Hey, man, I mean, he's still playing college football, though. Rules still, but at the same time, the reason why I won't touch it, I could also see them only winning 3 games.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have South Carolina as a stay away for me this year. There's way too many, quote, they could lose that game.
I stayed away so far, I didn't even put them on the list.
Yeah,
they're one of the 7 I didn't talk about.
The worst thing about South Carolina is if you bet their win total is you might be feeling really good halfway through the year, but the next 6 weeks are going to be absolute hell for you on Saturday because you're going to have straight cheek clinchers for the remainder of the year.
Take this just individually. Could you be convinced that they lose at least all of these games? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
At Missouri, at LSU, Oklahoma, Alabama, Ole Miss, at Texas A&M, Clemson.
I am so out on Missouri this year, I would take them off that list.
That's
but the
fair.
Other 6 names
that's,
on that.
That's still 6. Yeah.
That's a lot of toss-up games.
I mean, you got to go 4-2 off that list to beat the 7-5. So,
ooh. Shane Beamer might have his best roster since he's been there and go 7-5.
Dude, there's a chance that he could go winless.
And overachieve.
There's a chance he could go winless in the second half of the season outside of, I think it's Coastal Carolina they play.
Yeah, they get Coastal before Clemson.
They could go like 1-5 to end the year.
Oof.
It's plausible. Like you can look at the schedule and be like, honestly, I could see it. It's not that crazy.
I'm staying the hell away from Alabama.
I'm with you on
the
that.
The schedule is manageable, okay? I think there are two really, really, like, toss-up games in there. I'm giving them wins everywhere but Georgia and LSU, and those are toss-ups for me. Every other thing on the schedule, I expect Alabama to win. I will go in saying Alabama's the favorite right now on paper preseason. But the other ones, like I said, the Georgia game and the LSU game for right now on paper are toss-ups for me. But the other thing about him, and you can't deny it, the Vandy game was very, very concerning. The Michigan game was very, very concerning. The second half against Georgia, concerning to me as a coach.
Oklahoma,
very concerning. Those are the reasons why I'm not touching you until I figure out that you have consistency in this conference.
I have Texas A&M on mine I'm staying away from because I think they are a 7-win team at the very worst. But they lost a lot on defense, and I know that they brought in some help for Marcel Reed on that offense, but I just don't know if I trust Marcel Reed just yet to be saying that's definitely an 8-4 football team right now with him as a starter. I think they're going to be talented, but I think there's also going to be some ups and downs for that football program. And it's year 2 for Elko.
Can I, for the love of God, get some consistency out of A&M? Even if they were a consistent 500 football team, I'd be okay with it.
They
lose to the teams you're supposed to, beat the teams you're supposed to.
They haven't been consistent since they joined the AC or SEC.
No, they haven't.
No.
Except for that 1 year under Jimbo Fisher where they were consistently dog shit.
Well, no. There's that 1 year during COVID where they were 10-1.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
but
and they kind of got snubbed out of a playoff. But even then, didn't they get beat by?
They got killed by Alabama.
That's what it was.
Like murder.
They got thraxed out of
like
nowhere.
Their corpse was dragged around the field for 2 quarters. So I mean, the snubbed out of a playoff.
That was the year Dan Mullen blamed the Texas A&M loss on fans. They have too many fans in the stands.
Yes.
Remember that? I'm going to call to the SEC and say that they broke COVID
2020
rules.
Dan Mullen was on a heater, dude.
Yeah, he was.
2020 Dan Mullen might be one of my favorite coaches.
They have too many fans in the stands. I also showed up after losing a game to Missouri in a starship.
No, he beat them.
Darth Vader.
I'm going to start a fight at halftime,
then be Darth Vader after the game.
Yeah.
That's right.
Would we say on a heater or just off his rocker? Because I think it's more so like, this man is insane.
Also, basically being quoted or paraphrased as, I don't care about recruiting.
Yeah.
Then after we beat Georgia, have a really good season, shit the bed against LSU. We all know that happened.
Oh, season ended six weeks ago.
Season ended 6 weeks ago.
That was the start of the I'm off my rocker.
We don't care about the Oklahoma loss.
Yeah.
2020 Dan Mullen, legend.
I'm not touching Vandy. Yeah,
understandable. I'm like, skeptical, too.
Aren't they like 5.5 wins?
4.5.
4.5.
That's like Vandy expectation territory.
That's why I have
that's
him
crazy.
As a coin toss.
Yeah.
I have him as a toss-up for me. I could go either way here. Like, I might just for the hell of it say, I'll put some money on Vanderbilt winning 5.
The coin tosses to me were more of a category of teams where, like, your schedule is set the way where we're going to be flip-flopping whether or not you're going to make this all year. For example, LSU schedules like that. LSU schedule start, middle, end is very, very troublesome.
Yeah. I mean, you have to – basically, here's what I have a coin flip for them. You have to go 4-3 against these teams. Clemson, Florida, Ole Miss, South Carolina, Alabama, A&M, Oklahoma.
And those are ping, 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 just
it's all over the
scattered
place.
Across their, all over their the schedule. Place.
So it's like you basically go 500 with that. It's a toss-up.
Game of our life, cupcake. Game of our life, game of our life, cupcake. Game of our life, game of our life, game of our life, cupcake. That's what LSU's schedule looks like this year.
Pretty much. I'm staying away from the Florida Gators. I know that there's a lot of hype around DJ Lagway. I know that, you know, people
that's
think
me too. They're going to be flirting with it all year.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's the same thing as South Carolina where there's too many. Oh, they could lose that. At LSU, at Miami, at A&M, versus Texas, Georgia, Tennessee, at Ole Miss. Like, there's a lot of games on there where it's like I could very well see them losing that. It's too many for me to even touch them at over 6.5 wins.
I don't think there's a chance we lose to Bama at home. Josh Kelton, how long have you been a Georgia fan?
What are you talking about, Josh?
Somebody's new here.
I have Ole Miss as a coin toss because it is at 8.5. They could go 8-4 or they could go 9-3. I could see both scenarios. I think that there is going to be a drop off for Ole Miss this year, considering what they lost on defense. So I don't really know where to place them, but I could also be like, oh yeah, I could see 9 wins. I might dabble with it a little bit.
I think Oklahoma is going to be looking at the last 2 weeks of the season trying to figure out if they can get over their win total.
I was literally about
to
say,
you're going to be down to the wire with the Sooners this year.
The weird thing about Oklahoma is there's a lot of, oh, they could win that game. They could beat Michigan. They could beat Auburn. They probably should. Hopefully, maybe. They could beat Texas. Obviously, it's a rivalry game. They could beat South Carolina. They could beat Ole Miss. They could beat Tennessee. They should beat Missouri. They could beat LSU. They did it last year. Could they beat Alabama again? Like, there's basically 75% of their schedule is, I could see them doing it on a good day. Far too much for me to say that.
Did we have a unanimous lock?
I don't think any of us had the same lock.
Oh, no. Me and Brooks had the same Mississippi State.
No,
but you had it for
faded.
Opposite reasons.
We had the same Mississippi State.
We had the same Mississippi State.
You faded.
You faded.
Yes. I did.
You don't
fade.
Believe in the Bulldogs.
Come on. Let me bring you back to our side so we can have a unanimous lock so the fam can put their mortgage on Mississippi State over.
I'm not putting my faith in anything I don't believe in.
It's unfortunate.
That'd be misleading.
It's hard to argue with that, honestly.
It is hard to argue with that.
He believes in faith.
Quick, to before we end the show or end the national hour. Who is the team most impacted, or at least had the most beneficial run during the "we got no rules" bullshit going on in college football?
This was kind of the thing I touched on a while ago when we talked about this.
Who's the biggest bag man?
There were a lot of teams that had a lot of good recruits, but no one really thrived on the field. Yeah, we talk about how USC did a lot of recruiting damage. Miami's gotten all these guys. You know, you could say that maybe Tennessee was one of them. Tennessee just lost that quarterback that they flew a private jet out for. Didn't win anything from him. USC might fire their head coach this season, and Miami hasn't even made a conference title. So it's like, yeah, you have all these teams that kind of thrived in that in the recruiting realm, but none of them thrived on the field.
So there's an obvious answer then.
Who is it?
Texas.
Texas might
Texas is the lone high spender that's actually won football games.
But was that also because
at a high rate?
Was that also because Steve Sarkisian elevated that roster?
It's both.
Okay,
it's both. It's a combination. But that's why he's the one who actually did it.
I guess my question. You know what I mean? I guess my question is, like, if we had legitimate rules and we had all these things where it wasn't wild, wild west, would Texas not be where they are today?
No, they'd still be on the uprise because of Sarkisian.
Okay,
and because he's gotten his. I shouldn't say, but I could. He's very clearly a different head coach this time around than he was at USC. He's very clearly a different head coach this time around than he was at Washington.
Well, he's
older. He's more wise. He's had multiple more stops.
He's been in the game 10 years longer.
Been in the game 10
Kirby
years
Smart's
longer.
A different coach.
He's also kicked a major addiction.
For sure.
He's a much better football coach this time around. It also helps that he's got one of the biggest budgets in the sport currently, or has the last 3 years.
Definitely. I just don't know how much of Texas's rise in their success can be attributed to the fact that, oh, you were going out and paying really good players.
Mon Dangerous has a good point. Their offense would be the same. Their defense has been not drastic. It's been impacted by the fact that they can overpay.
That's
would you agree?
That's fair.
Okay.
I put Duke on my list. Hear me out.
All right. Let's
hear me out.
Let him cook.
Think about Duke's quarterback situation the last 3 years. All right, they had Riley Leonard. And then they were able to replace Riley Leonard after he transferred to Notre Dame with then Malik Murphy. And now they went and nabbed Tulane's starting quarterback, Darian Mensah, as well, which I guess cost around $2.5 million. You think Duke is paying $2.5 million for a quarterback 5 years ago? I think Duke has benefited greatly at the quarterback position because of this.
I would argue the inverse. Recruiting a three-star like Daniel Jones, recruiting a three-star like Riley Leonard was way more productive from wins and loss standpoint than whatever my man, number six, who transferred to Oregon State.
Malik Murphy.
Malik Murphy. I mean, they were just as good of a Duke football team when they weren't spending that kind of money. But yeah, they've been able to recruit talented players because of this.
Yeah, that's I'm not saying that they benefited the most. Yeah, but I think they've certainly benefited.
Miami's recruiting took an uptick, but I would argue that's just as much. They would have had an uptick under Mario Cristobal in comparison to Manny Diaz anyways.
And like I said, like, where's the uptick on the field?
Yeah, no. No one has transitioned spending money into wins quite like Texas has. Everybody else, you're right. Texas A&M, it failed miserably. Who are some other ones? Tennessee, it hasn't failed, but it hasn't, like, they're not winning national titles because of it.
No.
So yeah, you're probably right. It's more of a who did less with more discussion. I just thought it was interesting.
No, it's definitely an interesting discussion to have, but I don't think that you can I don't think we're going to walk away from this wild, wild west that was 5 years at the NIL era and go, that team succeeded and thrived solely because they were just blowing the bag on players.
Ohio State was a balance of both.
But Ohio State's Ohio State.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been...
They're a top three roster.
Always contending
like
for
it's
national
not,
titles.
Like, if you took away every... Like I said, like, you don't point to Ohio State and go, oh, well, they just succeeded because they spent all the money they could.
We got a whole nother hour coming up, and it is our best hour. It's our local hour. We finna talk that dog.